Chris White joins me this week to discuss mixed yeast fermentation. This is Beersmith Podcast number 256.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 256, and it's late April 2022. Chris White joins me this week to discuss mixed yeast fermentation. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent pending Brew Commander is a high quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, go to BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web based version of Beersmith is available with a new inventory module now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the web lets you edit, brew, and create recipes from any browser, including your desktop, tablet, or your mobile device. The web version gives you access to tens of thousands of recipes, online recipe editing, advanced water tools, and much more. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days for free by setting up an account at beersmithrecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out beersmithrecipes.com now and give Beersmith a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today, I welcome Dr. Chris White to the show. Chris is the president of White Labs, Inc., a top provider of brewing yeast worldwide, as well as 2015 winner of the AHA Governing Committee Award for a Lifetime of Achievement in Brewing. He is also the author of the book Yeast, which is the ultimate reference for brewing yeast. Chris, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Brad. I'm doing great. Awesome to be back on your show.
And you got a new baby too, right? I think since the last time we had you on.
Yeah. Speaking to you here from San Diego, where I live, and I've been here a lot. It's been one of the things during the little pandemic changes in people's lives is, you know, being home kind of worked well with having a baby a year and a half ago. So I've been home a lot, and it's been great.
And the last time I talked to you, I think the last time we had you on, you were facing some serious challenges at the beginning of the pandemic. How have things evolved over the last, almost 24 months, I guess?
Yeah, it's been interesting. You know, everybody listening's had to wade through challenges. You know, whether, you know, you're working somewhere or something with family or you're own a business, it all has a lot of impact, and we just try to weigh it as best as possible, keep the safety of the employees in mind, and jobs available and the company open and our families safe and things like that. So a lot of challenges that change day to day, but we're happy that things are pretty much back to normal now. We continue to produce yeast the whole time and San Diego and Asheville and Copenhagen. Our little breweries and restaurants weren't open until more recently, but those are open again and we're making beer again and along with the yeast, kind of getting back to normal.
And of course, we lost some breweries during the pandemic, but how are things now? Have things come back kind of close to the level they were before?
I think so. You know, people are going out and getting to drink craft beer and as well as staying home still a little bit more than they used to. And so home brewing is still strong and people are more on premise going places and drinking beer. So craft breweries are okay. Now they've got some of the canning that they developed along with the draft being back. So I think breweries are doing pretty well. Some are already closed and will close probably just with the debt incurred. And others will do great. So overall, we're seeing, I'd say growth. I mean, we're seeing growth. So that usually is mirrored in the industry of growing their sales. And it's still a shame when you see some close. I mean, we still see that in San Diego where some will close or go for sale. And that's always a shame. But overall, things are going great. Things in Europe seem to be really strong. They seem to just open up really, really fast and people really wanting to go get some craft beer.
Yeah, I know the tap rooms around here, at least the ones I visited, have been packed, to be honestly, for quite some time now. Anyways, today you wanted to discuss mixed yeast fermentation, which is interesting. I don't think it's a topic we've ever actually covered on the podcast. First of all, what do you mean by mixed yeast fermentation?
Basically, I mean using mixtures of pure cultures. So when we talk about pure cultures, we're usually talking about one strain, not necessarily purity. Sometimes when you say pure yeast cultures, but using pure yeast cultures, but think about a single strain, brewing with a single strain. And that has been what the industry has been for a long time. But as a yeast producer making about 100 different yeast strains a week, we've always had the ability to be able to use a whole bunch of different yeast strains in a beer. So I'm not really talking about sour beer fermentations or some of the things that are still done, but just simply taking mixtures of different yeast strains, using them in the same beer, and then letting more flavor develop.
Right. And have you had success with that?
Yeah, so I have personally. We've done different studies and papers and little seminars about mixed fermentations. We have produced over 20 different blends of yeast strains. They're already pre-blended for people. We've been doing that for a long time.
Oh, that's
available in the core. And then I was speaking to one of our bartenders here in San Diego at our White House Brewing Company, Matt Allen, and he got excited about the idea of using mixed strains. He gets a lot of free yeast here. So he started doing it. He's the one, he listens to your show. He's the one, could you ask me to talk about it on your show? Because he's been loving his results. And it's a little similar, you know, some people have done this probably in the past, but also you might have taken two beers and blended them together, mm-hmm. whether you're judging or something, and they go, wow, that combination is really good. We can go to another level here because the beers we make are split into two different fermenters and use two different yeast strains. So, for example, our IPA, our Tabular IPA, we can use 001 California Ale yeast and San Diego Super 090. Two similar but different strains. You combine them together in the glass, and there's a combination of the flavor compounds they produce, and it's generally a better tasting beer. So now you just take that back to the fermentation and do the fermentation separate.
Yeah, that is interesting. I know I've visited actually both your breweries here in the U.S. and you guys serve usually a beer made with a single wort, but often with two different yeasts as separate beers. So it's kind of fun to taste just the yeast differences, right?
Yeah, and sometimes they're wildly different just to capture people's imagination, and sometimes they're more similar to put a little more sensory focus on the tasting, and especially once you're within the lager realm of yeast strains. And so that same wort produced in the same kettle, mashed on, et cetera, split into different fermenters, smaller fermenters with different yeast is a fun way to try a lot of different yeast strains and flavors in beer.
Well, I want to dive into more the brewing in a few minutes, but I think the historical context kind of interesting here. Weren't beers really brewed with wild or mixed yeast strains for probably thousands of years before we started isolating things?
Yeah, I mean, brewers for most of history have been brewing without the knowledge of microbiology before it was a known field. And so they just passed these best practices down and a lot of top cropping. So you'd have mixed strains. They were hopefully not wild from the sense of not under your control. But if they were under your control, maybe that's not wild, but they were mixed. And the shelf lives would be short and things like that. But there was combinations of flavors from different yeasts. And so when you look at some of the, especially the ales and things that in just recent history, you can still find people talking about mixed strains. I mean, even on the lager side with Pilsner Urquell, stories of that big strain until more recently. And so that was just what had to be done, because how could you purify the yeast? And then that was done in 1883.
Hmm. So, I mean, but all the way up until 1883, we really didn't have any knowledge of any of this. And there wasn't a lot of, there really was no isolation of individual strains, right?
Exactly. Because even 1883, we were just starting to understand microbiology really through brewing. And a lot of research was going on in Europe. Louis Pasteur had shown that yeast was actually causing the fermentation, and bacteria and other yeast were causing the off flavors. So the natural concept was, what if you could purify yeast? But we didn't have petri dishes and some of the tools of microbiology. So Emil Christian Hansen's lab in Copenhagen at Carlsberg Laboratory within the brewery, but they were one of the first breweries to set up a laboratory in the 1850s when they built a brewery. People thought that was a little crazy, but it turned out to have some amazing results. And one of the things was that they, just through dilution, you know, things, years of failure, but eventually they were able to isolate a single strain in their dilutions and then propagate it up. And then they supplied that free to any brewery that wanted it. And so brewers for the first time were using pure cultures. So again, not thinking about the purity part as much, we're still at the doorstep of microbiology, but thinking about a pure culture from the sense of one strain.
And even before they did this or understood what yeast was, brewers were smart enough to reuse yeast. So I guess there was some self-selection going on probably at many of the major breweries, right?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, by reusing the yeast, which was a really peculiar, particular thing brewers had the ability to do in fermentation where other industries just weren't for all sorts of reasons. Brewing, you were able to reuse the culture and you're building it up. You're building the strength of the dominant strain or strains. And so while there's still going to be some other things in there, you're really out-competing that. And often people were brewing with pretty much single strains, but there was still usually a combination because those repitchings would last for years and years and years. And so the pure culture aspect changed beer in so many great ways because it could be more consistent. It could basically make the beer you're wanting to make. And it was a lot more under your control. Shelf life's improved. It's just, it started something that the whole industry turned to, and you may not need to as much anymore because from the purity standpoint, you can have lots of strains that are pure and combined together rather than have to purify the strains to get rid of the contaminants.
Well, I had Randy Mosher on last episode, and he mentioned that even when we did isolate yeast, you mentioned around 1883, we found some interesting things, like the fact that there were really two major yeast strains that dominated a lot of the European beer production, even at that time.
So. Yeah, what was interesting was that, you know, any strain could have been purified, but Carlsberg was using lager yeast. Mm-hmm. So what they purified was lager yeast. And the founder of Carlsberg had originally smuggled some lager yeast out of Prague. And so, you know, it's not unusual that type of strain, that Carlsberg type strain is what they started with there. And while they were giving it out, there was other hybridization events happening. You know, there's other changes, mutations that happened that breweries nearby, just as today, if you were using it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So Tuborg, which is also in Carlsberg, ended up having sort of a different type of lager yeast. Excuse me. And they continued till today using a different yeast strain, Tuborg. So even though Carlsberg and Tuborg are owned by the same company now, they continue to use these two different yeast strains in their fermentation, and really as the users, anybody using different yeast strains know your yeast strain really well, and they know the differences in the flavor characteristics and attenuation and things like that. But so you have some subtypes of lager yeast that develop.
Now, you mentioned in the late 1800s, they developed the first techniques for yeast purification. How long after that did we actually start to, you know, isolate the strains, get them into production, and get to a point where we were using primarily single strains in beer brewing. I assume that took some period of time, right?
Yes, and you know, with lager brewing, it spread pretty rapidly. People started taking these strains to North America, to Asia, to South America as they started opening breweries. But I think in present day, UK regions, Belgium, Ireland, where people stuck with ale fermentations, they didn't really adapt those changes of pure culture until much later. So it was really the lager brewing that went towards pure culture and using certain strains. And since lager brewing is what became the dominant volume of beer made worldwide until kind of craft brewing came back and spread ale flavors again.
And were there any dedicated yeast labs at that point? I mean, did anybody actually start producing commercial yeast in even the early 1900s?
That's a great question for some historians out there. It's really hard. I haven't really found much about commercial companies. Siebel Institute, which was started in the 19th century, they provided slants in North America of yeast up until about the times White Lab started in 1995. And then there was some in Europe and like within Germany that was put more in universities. But for the most part, it was the breweries themselves investing in the labs, the purification, the propagation, and also to protect their own strain characteristics. Mm-hmm. So you really had, that's one reason you have in different strains almost known by different cities, because where these different breweries were, they were sort of harboring and developing over time, naturally, their own yeast strains.
That's pretty interesting because the first time I remember being able to get, for example, liquid yeast was perhaps in the early to mid 90s, and at least at the homebrew level. And you're telling me there really weren't a lot of commercial yeast producers until about that same time frame.
Right. And so the earliest craft brewers had a hard time getting, yeast strains, traditional yeast strains, they'd have to go to Europe, they'd work with Siebel, and then some labs started opening up. When I was homebrewing, starting in the late 80s and early 90s, and then one reason we started White Labs was to make pitchable quantities of these liquid yeast cultures, because right. That was new at the time. So it wasn't just slants. You could start your beer with a certain amount of liquid yeast and have fermentation within 8 to 12 hours. And that was kind of a game changer. But so the supply and the number of strains, I hope it helped craft breweries not think about that part, because while it was easy for a big brewery to set up the lab, the personnel, the propagation equipment, a little harder for a small restaurant brewery or home brewer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, after 140 years or so of brewing with single strains, we're starting to finally rediscover the benefits of using multiple strains. What are some of the benefits you get from using more than one strain in your beer?
There's a lot of benefits. I mean, the only really negatives are cost, getting these different strains, and maybe keeping them. But the benefits are almost the same exact things we talk about with strains being different. They produce flavor and aroma compounds during fermentation, and they each produce a different amounts and types of flavor and aroma compounds in, right around these flavor thresholds. And so if you have two or three or four that are all producing different amounts of these flavor and aroma compounds, you put them together during fermentation, they're not competing with each other. Brewer's yeast doesn't compete, doesn't have kill factors. They've just been used to pure culture for the most part. So they produce these flavor and aroma compounds together, and you get a really unique beer. And even for the people reusing the yeast, say collecting from the bottom of the fermenter, the population, while changes a little bit in terms of if you start with everything 50-50, we've done some work where you can track how that population is changing, but the amount of you still have millions of cells per mil of each one, and the amount of flavor compounds they're producing are pretty consistent from batch to batch, even when we're pitching.
And is it, are they actually competing with each other, for example? So if I pitch two yeasts into my beer, are they going to, is one going to dominate the other perhaps?
So that's the natural environment, and that's what you'd find out in the wild. But within brewing, since they were pure cultures for so long, you just don't really see that competition. You see some flocculation differences, which can amount to kind of collecting different. But again, most strains are collected from the bottom now anyway, regardless of how good they flocculate. Mm-hmm. So it's not as much of a risk or a problem as it might sound.
So so what are some of the things that you did at White Labs that worked out well for you at your brewery where you're actually experimenting with this?
Well, we started a project, a collaboration that became kind of a bigger one a number of years ago, resulting in a paper in 2016 on the sequence of 150 full genome sequences of 157 different yeast strains. But originally we started with 96 yeast strains. And that makes sense for the science people out there, 96 well plate that you do this work in. But we said, let's make a beer with these 96 yeast strains. That's something we can do. So the 96 pure cultures, making a beer out of, probably hadn't been done before. And we call that Frankenstout.
And is that, are you using all 96 strains at once? Is that what you're telling me?
All 96 strains.
How did that turn out? What was that like?
I remember just the excitement of trying it the first time in 2013. And I didn't know what to expect. And I was blown away by the balance. It was dry, which makes sense from the kind of going to the highest attenuation, the lowest final gravity in that population. It tasted like it had been barrel aged, but the beer had seen no wood, but just some of these characteristics from the more wild strains in the collection, the Belgian style strains. The phenolics were there, but they were pretty tampered by other flavor and aroma compounds. And it just became a really nice, complex 9% beer. Now we moved it down to about 8%, but we still make it. And it's an example of what you can do with a whole lot of different yeast strains.
Now, are there any guidelines for identifying which strains might work well and not work well together in a mixed fermentation?
Well, that's kind of what we did with the 20 blends that we have. And some of those are seasonal, but a lot of them are produced year round. And you see, you can also see with some of the hybrids being made, you know, taking some properties of strains and putting into a single strain, sometimes with GMO methods. That's what got Matt interested, who I mentioned earlier. He's like, well, if there's hybrids, why don't I just, to make all these combination flavors, why don't I just use the multiple strains? Because it's easy for him here too. So, you know, looking at what people have been targeting in hybrids, looking at what kind of beers you're making. Anybody making different beers, you know, even like I said, are something simple like an IPA or a hazy or a kvik with the different kvik strains because they're all quite different. It's really up to your own creativity.
And I mean, how do you go out picking them? Is there some guide that you can use to help pick, you know, which ones might work well together? You mentioned the attenuation, for example. If I mix a high attenuation yeast with a low attenuation yeast, I assume the high attenuation is going to dominate, right?
Yeah, you can get pretty get creative, but you can also be fairly simple. And I'll give you an example of one of those with Morbier, a retailer a lot of people would know. And they wanted a blend from us that they call Best of Both Worlds, which was our California Ale Yeast 001 and our English Ale Yeast 002, their top-selling strains. And they said, well, let's make a blend of that. And what's fun about it is it's the attenuation. So you get the attenuation of the more attenuative strain. So it was as dry as California Ale Yeast. You get the flocculation of the more flocculent strain because there's co-flocculation. So 002 be more flocculent, made for a better collection and clearer beer without filtering. Mm-hmm. And then you get the combination of the kind of more British ester characters from the English ale yeast and then the more familiar IPA kind of esters, because IPAs became so synonymous with that strain, produced from the 001.
And those are very, very different yeast strains. I mean, obviously, right? The California L is a very, very clean, you know, high attenuation yeast strain, whereas the W01, I've used both of them, is much, as you mentioned, much more British, right?
Exactly. So that's, I think, kind of the fun. If you're going to find yeast, perhaps think about having more different strains together, right? Because again, you get the co-flocculation if it's a really flocculent strain like the 002, because it's the 001 is going to be captured in those flocks and brought to the bottom where most people are collecting yeast.
That's pretty cool. Did you have any really bad experiences mixing together various yeast strains?
Sometimes the if you're just combining a lot of Belgian style strains, you know, the phenols can really ratchet up. Some people are more sensitive to that. But saisons with mixed strains actually it was pretty successful because some of the nice saison strains can stall a little bit. You don't have that if you blend the strains. Speaking of that, one of the experiments that we did was with lager yeast and saison strains. So you get kind of that lager, drier characteristic, but you get some of that farmhouse flavors from the saison strains.
Have you mixed? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying like lager and ale strains.
That's what I was going to ask is, have you mixed a lot of lagers and ales together?
Yes. Yes. And, you then have to think about fermentation temperature a little bit on that particular example. But lager yeast ferment more fine. They like it as much as ale strains, but the ale strains don't ferment cold as well. So picking something like 60, 62 degrees Fahrenheit is what we have done for the lager and ale blends.
Now, I had a question. I was on the web the other day on your website trying to find some of the detailed profile information. I know you guys used to have a lot of the flavor profiles for all the yeast, but in detail where you'd actually have, you know, produce this much off compound and attenuated this fast and this kind of a thing. Is that still available and where can I find that?
Yes, that's a good question. One of the projects we did during the pandemic, we had like 20 different projects where people could work together on just to have something to kind of push some of the projects innovation we wanted to do. And one of those things was the website. So we did a new website. Some things stayed on the website. Some things were not kept. We still have all that data, but it's not on there right now. But what we're trying to do is take the information from White Labs Brewing Company with these beers, these different yeast strains, these blends, and make that something you can find about the yeast strains. So right now you can go to the White Labs Brewing Company sites. You can look at our beers. You can look at our beer sheets that have yeast strains, but you can't find that on the whitelabs.com yeast pages yet. But okay. That's what we're working on.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I think a couple of years ago, a lot of it was there under Yeast Man or one of the databases anyways. So how does mixed fermentation compare with wild or spontaneous yeast fermentation?
This is a lot more under control than spontaneous, because one of the reasons why things are mixed in a sour beer is for the really the same reasons I'm talking about, the flavors you get, right? The flavors you get from the lactic acid bacteria, the flavors you get from Brettanomyces, the flavors you get from brewing yeast that have to be there to make ethanol and make a fermentation happen. And so that's a really obvious example that has stayed as part of current brewing that's historical, but a very small niche. That's still, and now people, instead of doing spontaneous for a lot of times, they're adding the yeast, they're adding the Brettanomyces, they're adding the bacteria. Just sort of what I'm talking about with taking that to just the more general ale and lager portfolios.
So, I mean, is this your hybrid yeast that you're developing? I know last time I think I had you on, you were talking about hybrid yeasts that actually produce some sour off flavors by themselves, right?
Yeah, I think everybody's developing some hybrid strains, and so that's one avenue to go as well. And that will have an important part of the future of brewing. And then there's just the ability to take the unmodified strains and put them together. And so I thought I would talk about that as we're on this cusp of having more hybrid strains available, because you have that ability to mix. And it doesn't always have to be expensive, like going out and buying a dozen yeast strains. A lot of home brewers and commercial brewers have multiple yeast that they've collected from different fermenters.
Okay.
I suggest trying to put together what you have that you have already collected from different beers and making a beer out of it.
Interesting. And I mean, I assume you can reuse yeast in a blend. So I mean, you can take one yeast that you made recently and mix it in with the yeast that you purchased, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's another good way to do it.
So another inexpensive way to get into it. Now, are a lot of these blends, you mentioned you have pre-blended yeast. Are the pre-blended yeasts available at the homebrew level?
Yes. Some of the, we have some we've been doing for a lot of years. Probably the most successful blend we've done is WLP067.
Okay.
Our Coastal Haze yeast blend. Because, to make a hazy beer that has the permanent haze, that has some of the characteristics, we've taken some of our hazy strains and non-hazy strains and created a blend. And that's been real successful. We have an American ale yeast blend. We have a cream ale yeast blend that have stayed in the core lineup. We've done a Saison blend that does not have some of the, it's just taking out some of the characteristics that people don't want. So trying to create blends that that are really a combination of what people are looking for.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any success taking this to other breweries? I know your craft brewery that you have two craft breweries at least that I know of that where you brew with mixed yeast. Have you had any luck pushing this into the commercial world?
Oh yeah. There are other blends we make, just on custom, for certain breweries. Some breweries, like if they don't want the, STA1 strains in their brewery, that's where that, Saison blend comes in, the non-Saison, yeast. Because they might not want that yeast that can over-ferment a beer in their commercial brewery. So that's been popular. And then some, more sour blends that we make. Appalachian Tart is one we came out with recently as well, and a Berliner Weiss blend and things like that. So all the blends that we make, we're trying to come out with something that would appeal to commercial breweries and to home brewers.
Mm-hmm. And are there a lot of craft breweries mixing their yeast now?
Yes, yeah. I would say the majority still don't. I mean, it's still a sort of a fringe kind of topic, but it's a fun topic. And I'd imagine there's a couple hundred breweries blending yeast.
That's a sizable number, yeah. Excellent. I have to ask, are there any styles that work particularly well, any beer styles that work particularly well with this particular technique?
Well, I kind of go back to what I say about kind of blending beers. It doesn't have to be something super complex, but, if we talk about even those lagers, a type one, a type two, a Froberg, a Carlsberg type of strain, a Tuborg, you put those together, those same yeast in the fermenter, you're going to get something that's a combination of the single strains. Hmm. So to me, I'm not really pigeonholing it on a certain, I might've started out that way 15 years ago and looking at beers that were just more attenuative driven.
Okay.
Cause for example, when the high gravity beers became something everybody wanted to do, really over 15% alcohol kind of beer, that's sort of fallen away commercially. It's not that people don't do it. It's just that they don't sell that great. So, you know, it didn't continue as something that was just sort of some permanent style that stays on tap in tap houses. But getting that attenuation often was helpful, adding different yeast strains later that could attenuate further. We weren't thinking about the flavor compounds produced. So if you want flavor compounds produced, you got to have that yeast right in the beginning. So I'm talking about in this talk really about adding them all in the beginning, because you got to go through that whole growth phase where the yeast are multiplying.
Right.
They're producing their flavor compounds and then finishing the beer. Anything you add later when most of the carbohydrate's gone is not going to go through the growth phase of really producing flavors.
Now, are there any practical considerations when you're working with two yeast strains? For example, you know, a lot of us do a liquid starter of some kind. Can I mix those together in the starter, or do I have to try and separate them somehow when I'm creating a starter?
No, you can mix them together in the starter as well. You know, they're only going to grow in the starter is kind of how much volume is in the starter for how much yeast you start with. But those are all such concentrated growth situations anyway. You're not getting that traditional growth curve, fermentation curve that you would see in your fermenter. But you are getting some metabolism started. You may or may not get CO2 produced, usually, but sometimes not, when there's a higher cell count going in the starter.
So if I'm a home brewer and I want to use this technique, and let's say I go out and buy two packets of yeast, I mean, I can go pitch those both in one starter and then pitch them right into the beginning of the batch, and hopefully I'll get a blend of those flavors in the finished beer, right?
Just that easy, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, where can somebody learn a little bit more about mixed yeast fermentation? Has there been any real research published on it?
You know, besides, I've given a few seminars. Really think of anything offhand. I would say maybe some of the new papers about the hybrid strains and talking about combinations of flavors, mm-hmm. but just from this perspective, thinking about starting with the parent strains would be the best way to look on new material that's out there.
So it's kind of an open book at this point, right? I mean, obviously you can go and look at some of the blends that you put together, because obviously those work well, right?
Right. Yeah, those... And that's something that's not new for us, right? That's something we've been doing for a long time.
Right. But it's just, I find it interesting there. I guess there's not that much material published. I don't have a lot of material that I've seen on it, actually.
Oh. Right.
Well, Chris, what are your closing thoughts on mixed yeast fermentation and how people can take advantage of this as brewers?
Experiment, have some fun, use some combinations, think about what kind of beer you want to make. Think about the different properties. It's the same ideas of yeast strain selection. I mean, for every beer you make, you're selecting a yeast strain, presumably based on some properties, making the flavor characteristics you want, the technical parameters, a combination of, and think about the different yeast strains you've used. Maybe some you've wanted to use, but you haven't because you like certain other strains. Well, maybe starting as the blends, blending in some of those strains you may be interested in. Look at our website, for example, and look at those almost, 100 different yeast strains, and think about some and from other vendors as well that you haven't used before.
And Chris, since we got a minute or two left, I thought I'd give you a chance to talk about what are some of the new things going on at White Labs.
We're doing a lot with ways we produce yeast. So there's so much that goes on here on a daily basis, small changes, small tweaks, working on new yeast strains in the lab, working on the research projects, which say about 20, usually from whether they're hybrids to some other non-beer things. There's a lot of non-beer things like seltzer that people are doing now, and then some of those high gravity seltzers that get a little complicated in water. We've changed over on the commercial side from our Pure Pitch to Pure Pitch Next Generation, where we've added a handle and caps to the pouches of yeast and sized it to give brewers 7.5 million cells per mil for most normal ale fermentations. And we're, you'll be seeing more of that from the homebrew side this summer. That's been exciting.
So are you planning to change your packaging at the homebrew level?
You heard it here.
It's big news. Okay.
Yeah. We just want to keep changing. Yeah. I guess that's what we do. We do a lot of different things here. And we're always just trying to get better. That's how we find things exciting. That's why we have a lot of stuff under the same roof, from the chemistry lab that does analysis on beers and things to the yeast production itself, the bacteria production, the kitchens, the brewery, the teaching. Those are things we like doing. And so we try to add those different elements of the company together to try to create new things. And going to a homebrew pack that has some, you know, innovation in it that some people have been asking us for is our current direction.
Well, hopefully we'll learn a little bit more about that at HomebrewCon coming up in June. I think you're going as well, right? June, yeah. It's in Pittsburgh this year, I think.
Yeah. Been a while since I've been to Pittsburgh. Looking forward to going. I know a lot of people live close enough to drive there, and that's always ends up in being in a great homebrew conference. I think it'll be a great, Pittsburgh will be a great host city. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. It's been 3 years since we've been to a in-person homebrew con. So I think we're all kind of looking forward to that coming up as well.
Yeah.
Anyways, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it. And talking a little bit about mixed yeast fermentation. I know I want to try and get out and try it. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks. That's a fun to talk to you today, and look forward to the next time.
My guest today is Dr. Chris White, president of White Labs and author of the book Yeast from the Brewers Association. Thanks again, Chris.
Thanks, Brad.
A big thank you to Dr. Chris White for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web-based version of Beersmith with the new inventory module is available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the web lets you brew, edit, and create recipes from any browser, including your desktop, tablet, or mobile device. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at BeersmithRecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version at one low price. Check out BeersmithRecipes.com to give it a try today. I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.